You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
This is the Dom Salvia Show. My name is Jim Santel. Dom has invited me to be here in his seat, not only for the first hour, but also now for the second hour, where we talk about some of these breaking issues in our national experience, spending much of our first hour talking about the USAID and the plan of the Trump administration to bring it to a close, calling back to the United States, shuttering the offices of those staff members in foreign nations assigned to work with the locals, community leaders, and officials in foreign nations on those many USAID projects. Breaking news just moments ago. A federal judge just this afternoon. His name is Carl Nichols. We've talked a lot about Carl Nichols on the Saturday broadcast because he's one of the many district court judges responsible for oversight of many of the January 6th cases, the insurrectionists charged with attempting to overthrow our government on January 6th. Judge Carl Nichols conducting a hearing just this afternoon and saying in the end that he is going to pause. He's going to suspend this midnight deadline for the U.S. Agency for International Development to be stripped down to just a few hundred workers from a workforce of more than 5,000 people worldwide. This comes, of course, just hours before that was supposed to happen. There is essentially no harm to the government to pausing its staffing plans, Judge Nichols said when he was announcing his decision. Again, what's going on here? What happens is, of course, you've got petitioners. There's a group called the American Foreign Service Association, a union representing 1,800 Foreign Services officers working for USAID, and something else called the American Federation of Government Employees had sued the Trump administration to stop this from happening. Judge Nichols conducts what's called a preliminary hearing, an injunctive hearing, and he's effectively done this. He's entered what's called a temporary restraining order, temporary because it's not going to last long unless he extends it, a restraining order that prevents the government, prevents the Trump administration from going ahead with its plans to shutter USAID. And at this hearing, the judges impose a very limited TRO, a temporary restraining order, before midnight. And that would also give him an opportunity to address whether 500 employees already on leave would have their leave rescinded. So lots of things happening here at the very last moment. The groups had asked the court to do just that, to stop this from going ahead, said that the efforts here have generated a global humanitarian crisis by abruptly halting the crucial work of USAID employees, grantees, contractors, and the nations served by the USAID. Not a single one of the defendants' actions to dismantle USAID were taken pursuant to congressional authorization, and pursuant to federal statute, Congress is the only entity that may lawfully dismantle that agency. That's what their lawsuit says. That's what the judge agrees with. And yes, indeed, as Jess is celebrating right here, that's what she said. She said that just this past hour, even before the judge announced it from his bench in Washington, D.C. Plainly, we have not heard the last of this. Of course, during that hearing, we have the acting assistant attorney general. His name is Brett Schumate, S-C-H-U-M-A-T-E, who said that the judge should not enter this TRO. And Judge Nichols responded, he said, what is the urgency of doing this? Why is this so important to happen tonight? Obviously, the assistant attorney general not successful, Jess, in convincing the judge to put this on hold, but really does just put this on hold for a time. And again, we'll be revisiting all of this as the judge continues to exercise jurisdiction. This, again, a temporary restraining order, not a final order. Lots of litigation, lots of lawyers involved in all this, and most importantly, lots of employees of USAID now in the crosshairs of this fight. Most importantly, as we've talked, when we speak about the mission, the purpose of USAID, we think about those programs, those initiatives, those outreach efforts to our nations that are our allies, some of them not our allies, that benefit from this important work, that happening just this afternoon. Also like to acknowledge lots of other comments from people like Cam in Appleton and Tony in Columbus, who are talking again about DOGE and about economics and money spent by our government in this and other initiatives. Appreciate all of those kinds of reference points as well. In addition to, our, of course, comment on the drop box here about this, we've got callers as well. Let's go back to some of those callers. Let's begin with Cindy from Appleton. Cindy, appreciate your participation in our discussion today. Cindy?
Jim, you said earlier, yeah, I'm here.
Go right ahead.
You said earlier that they're bringing this department to its knees. This is going to bring our whole country to its knees. We're not going to survive the first 100 days, I'm afraid, because I think he is opening us up for a takeover by Russia. I'm terrified. I'm simply sickened to my stomach by this. The man is a lunatic.
And Cindy, I think I suspect many of our listeners share your concern about this. We do these things, and sometimes I think your point, Cindy, is that we think that these are just administrative decisions made by people in government. They're in Washington, D.C., and oh gosh, they're overseas, and we don't see much of them. I suspect many of us do not even know about the USAID until this discussion, other recent attention to it. But when these things happen, they put in line a whole series of things that can cavalcade and cascade into horrific things can happen. As many of our callers and our writers have also indicated, when we're not there, others, Cindy, mm-hmm. you just mentioned Russia, right? And they can enter the field. And most importantly, human beings who need poverty assistance, who need disaster assistance, mm-hmm. don't get it. That's a good thing for our nation to be all about. Why? Just because it's right to do it. Right, Jess?
Right. Absolutely. And if, you know, serving human needs doesn't tickle your fancy, if that's not a good enough reason to keep this agency running, what about the soft power? What about the influence that it gives America worldwide?
Precisely.
We've had several callers and texters come in talking about the goodwill that it generates worldwide when America is providing these essential services. And that is true. And there's an actual term for it, soft power.
Soft power.
That
right?
This is not our military force. This is not necessarily our economic force. This is our social force. Right. This is our using our resources to do good. And being, frankly, recognized for that.
Right. And there's no doubt that that happens, too, right? You're going to the USAID office, and it does, in fact, have the seal of the United States government on the front office. It's very clear that this is the United States that's present mm-hmm. in my neighborhood doing these things. As Jess just said, socioeconomic assistance, financial assistance, public-private partnerships that
legal
happen.
Legal assistance.
Legal assistance. Lawyers can sometimes assist in these kinds of things as well. Disasters, poverty, all these kinds of things are bilateral interests, country to country, all of that important. Appreciate very much that call, Cindy, and that observation as well. Joe from Madison. Joe, appreciate your participation in our discussion this afternoon as well.
Thanks. I had three points to make, and I'll be quick about them. The first one is that as we think about foreign aid, and of course USAID is just part of foreign aid that we have, according to the foreignassistance.gov, it is only 1.2% of our total federal budget. 1.2%. So it's not like we're going broke on this, people. I realize every
exactly.
dollar should be accounted for, but let's be reasonable. And when you speak of goodwill and soft power that you were describing, both Mark and Jess, it's even more than that. It's money, money, money for us, too. U.S. farmers stand to lose billions of dollars because they had contracts with USAID to supply rice, wheat, soybeans that are sold and then used for relief purposes, for food relief purposes. So there are a lot of farmers right now that are looking around, and boy, their contracts are not looking so good because they had contracts with USAID to buy this food. And then the last thing I'll mention is when you put this kind of uproar and chaos into the system, in the same way that the farmer in Washington State is suddenly going, now what do I do? There are other people that are thinking, okay, now what do I do? And one of them I would offer is more and more people are talking about the fact that Justin Trudeau in the last week mentioned that in his conversations with Mr. Trump, that it was quite clear to him that Trump definitely wants to annex Canada for its strategic minerals, which brings about an interesting turn. We have been wedded to Canada as our partner, just a soulmate practically. But that doesn't mean that has to always be true. And some are talking now about Canada joining the European Union. What, you say? Well, it's not part of Europe. Well, guess what? Apparently, Article 49, which sets up the European Union, does not define European. So is it true that with having a great European ancestry, many people from Europe in Canada, you know, one province where they speak French, but even more importantly, Canada has it has fossil fuels, and more importantly than that, a heck of a lot of lithium among its strategic minerals. Would Europe like to have part of that? You bet. Would it make sense to them to hurry Canada up along the line to say, you know what, you're European enough for us. Come on in. And what does that mean to America when you got European Union right north of you where you used to have just plain Canada, our good old buddy? But instead, it's aligned with Europe now. Fascinating to think about. You just don't know yeah. where these things are going to go, do you?
Right. And your larger point, Joe, of course, is that they're all connected, right? Maybe they're all connected in ways that we can't even contemplate in the moment, but they are. You do one thing here, and the consequences are dramatic.
Those
in
butterflies
other areas.
Are flapping their wings.
They're going all over the place, Jess. Exactly. Joe, thanks so much for your very insightful comments and your addition to this good conversation about the reason why USAID is there, the reason it's been around for decades, and the, frankly, good decision by a federal judge, at least for now, mm-hmm. at least for now, to breathe some life back into this important agency. We also have online Bob. Bob, appreciate your contribution to our conversation as well.
Good evening, Jim.
Bob, thank you for being a part of our discussion. Go ahead.
In a former life, I used to be a traveling musician, and I did a lot of work up in Canada. And also I did some in Europe and some down south.
Bob, just want to let you know we're coming up on a break.
And Bob, I'll stay with you. You know what? Why don't you tell us more about your work as a musician in Canada right after this break, because I suspect you've got an interesting comment to make for us. Hang on the line, if you would, Bob, and all the rest of you as well. We appreciate so much your calls, your comments. That'll continue to be part of our discussion this afternoon here on the Dom Salvia Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is the Dom Salvia Show. My name is Jim Santel, your host for these remaining segments of this second hour of our broadcast on a busy and active Friday afternoon.
Goodness, that time goes quickly.
Yes, it does, Jess, does it not? And we were in the middle of a good conversation with Bob calling in. He was telling us about his past, or maybe his present as a musician, and also some connections to Canada. Bob, thank you for sticking on the line with me. Your comment and your observation about your own life and why that's relevant to USAID.
Well, it's not Canada specific, but it is. I would go around half of the world. And when I first started traveling, people and go, where are you from? I'd say, Chicago. They would pantomime a machine gun and say, oh, Al Capone.
There's a reputation out there, even internationally, right? Right?
Right. So, the years go on. I'm traveling around primarily Europe and doing my gigs. And where are you from? America. Oh, what's with this Richard Nixon guy? Oh, no, no, no. I'm not responsible, you know.
You didn't vote for him in 68 or 72, I take it.
No, sir. And now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, some poor guitar player is going to be wandering around Europe or Mexico or Canada. Where are you from? USA. What was with this Trump character? You guys got to explain this one. You know, you got explaining to do, Lucy. So,
right.
And this is the image. That's the thing.
Right.
That is the image. We're not looked at as the guys who saved World War II. We're not looked at as the saviors who come around with food and medicine and help. We're looked at as a bunch of clowns.
And the ones who pulled that medicine and food.
Yes, right, right. And who, again, whether it's the greatest generation and the World War II period of time and the times that have followed that, our commitment, again, has continued to be international, right? Even under all sorts of presidents, again, Republicans, whether it's Richard Nixon, George W. Bush, H.W. Bush, Jimmy Carter, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, all of them important to their administrations because they understood the importance of America in the world stage. And Bob, your experiences in the past and your prediction about that future guitar player, probably spot on. And mm-hmm. so lots of mm-hmm. things to think about, again, in terms of our overall reputation, right, Jess, in the national and international community as these kinds of things happen. Right now, we can thank a federal judge maybe for giving us a little glimmer of hope.
At least a couple days.
Right, at least a couple of days. And who knows what can happen in that. And we'll see what Carl Nichols does. Bob, I appreciate mm-hmm. very much the comment as well. All of that on USAID, plainly on this program, The Dom Salvia Show, and my own on Saturday mornings. We'll continue to focus on this because it's also a rule of law issue. It's also about the ways in which government works and sometimes doesn't work. In that connection, I want to tell you specifically that tomorrow, the Saturday and Sunday in our weekend show, we're going to be talking about some of the major changes made by this administration inside the Department of Justice. We began a lot of that in our broadcast last weekend. There's been a whole lot more that's happened just in this past week, including the investiture, the swearing in mm-hmm. of our new Attorney General, Pam Bondi. We're going to talk about the things that she has done inside the Department of Justice that in many ways parallel the kinds of things we're talking here about the USAID. And among those, of course, is the establishment of some task forces. Some task forces, and in particular, a task force, a DOJ task force, actually announced by the president. It's going to be addressing what they perceive to be an anti-Christian animus.
Yes.
And a task force meant to address that. Donald Trump, our president, announcing this. And, of course, all of this being implemented by incoming Attorney General Pam Bondi in the days ahead. The mission of the task force to immediately halt all forms of anti-Christian targeting and discrimination in the federal government. That's a very, very...
We have that?
We have that, apparently, right? Including at the Department of Justice, according to what the Attorney General and the President have said. That includes, of course, the FBI beyond... the Department of Justice, the IRS, other agencies. In addition, the task force will work to fully prosecute anti-Christian violence and vandalism in our society and to move heaven and earth, perhaps appropriate references, to defend the rights of Christians and religious believers nationwide. All of that going on inside the Department of Justice. The White House also announcing a former White House faith office. The office will be led by Paula White. She worked as an advisor to Donald Trump on a similar initiative in his first term. And that, of course, also a part of what's coming out of Washington just this past week in the areas of faith, in the areas of religion. It would be awfully nice if our president were to talk about the importance of understanding all faiths in our nation, that we are not a Christian nation. We're not a Muslim nation. We're not a Jewish nation. And all of those faiths, we're not a sick nation. We're a nation of diversity. And our Constitution contemplates, number one, that there would be freedom of religion across the board. And it certainly would be good, to the extent that there are programs and initiatives of this administration being announced, if we further endorse the right of people of all faiths and people who have no faith to pursue their beliefs and their religions as they like. In that connection, one of our callers who's been on a line an awful long time up to now, Matt, calling in from Middleton. Matt, thanks so much for sticking with Jess and me. You have a question also in this area generally, I understand, about religion and
Christianity. With 1 minute left.
With 1 minute left. So, Matt, we'll take your question. And then we'll answer that perhaps following the break. But go ahead, Matt. Tell us what you're thinking about.
Yeah, it's about Project 25, this Christian white nationalist identity that seems to be behind the project and wiping out anything that's liberal or free thinking or whatever. When they get away with this and they start coming after people and, you know, ostracizing people like me who are not religious, we become targeted. Are there any laws to protect people like us?
Great question, Matt. And you know what? I'm going to attempt a response to that as we go forward here in the Dom Savio Show. Appreciate the question, the observation, and we'll talk more about that right after this. Dom Savio Show. My name is Jim Santel. These are the final segments of our time together this afternoon with Jess here in the studios. With me, as always, taking your phone calls, your comments, questions. Appreciate those so very much. Right before the break, talking with Matt, he's asking the question, you know, what does one do if one has an interest in ensuring that the government lives up to its obligation under the Constitution? That's a bit of a recodification, Matt, of your comment, your question about religion in America. Amendment 1, this is James Madison stuff, right? 1789, writes that Congress makes no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. A lot more there in that First Amendment to the Constitution. But that's the first portion of the First Amendment. And it does have two particular aspects to it. Can't in any way impugn upon, intrude into the free exercise of religion or establish a religion, which is also the concern, I suspect, that animated Matt's comment as well. Plainly, an awful lot of lawsuits brought under both branches of that portion of the First Amendment, including the Establishment Clause, by people of faith, people who do not have particular religious affiliations, people of all faiths who feel that the government is somehow involved in religion in a way that it should not be. And we know that there have been a lot of Supreme Court cases in recent times having to do with funding and scholarships and even things like flag flying, all kinds of things having to do with the intersection of government and religion. James Madison basically saying that those two should not intersect.
It has historically been a poor interaction to have those two entities crossing over and shaking hands.
That's exactly right. Historically, we know that that has not been a good experience for nations all across the planet, and certainly for ours as well. Interesting, the Supreme Court recently going and adopting with the pen of the Chief Justice a sort of a new standard, and that is whether or not the action by the government has a discriminatory impact upon religion. That's the new test. And it opens up an awful lot more opportunities for government programs that do seem to embrace religions to be approved. We've talked about a lot of those on Amicus, a Law Review, and plainly more of those coming up when it comes to more Supreme Court analysis. Matt, your comment very well placed. Of course, the legislature, our Congress, has also enacted various pieces of legislation. You can research this and go online to enforce and protect those fundamental rights that, as Jess just said, are sometimes trampled on, but often are should be observed both in practice and in word. The answer is, yes, litigation does enforce some of that. Advocacy to your nation's representatives, to your state and local representatives about the importance of a division, a clear line between religion and government. That's when things are operating well. If, in fact, we undermine that fundamental principle, things go badly. And so we'll look forward to more invocations, I suspect, of that language of the First Amendment as the Department of Justice, the White House, seem to dabble in this notion of protecting a particular religion, and that is Christianity, and advocating this view that Christianity has been attacked. And again, my great concern is the lack of focus on all faiths and simply supporting the notion that any government, without intruding into the free exercise, without intruding into establishing religion, would simply acknowledge that all religions have the right to exist and people have the right to exercise their faith as they choose. That's what government should be saying, and not identifying a particular goal with respect to a particular religion. We're getting very close to that establishment violation, maybe even that free exercise violation, which James Madison plainly told us, counseled us against. Again, Matt, appreciate very much the comment. In this, our near final segment, I want to do a few additional comments and observations about the news. Promised at the start some more news about the Department of Education, and we'll talk more about this down the road, as Dom will as well. The Department of Education also established, as we know, by, again, a favorite president, his name, Jimmy Carter, right? 1980, May 4th, 1980, its mission to establish policies on federal financial aid for education, distributing those and monitoring those funds, federal funds, collecting data on America's schools and disseminating research so that we can educate better, focusing national attention on key issues in education, focusing on the things that are important at the local levels to teaching, to educating our youth, making recommendations for legitimate reform. All of that inside the mission of the Department of Education. And yes, indeed, somewhat in line with the discussion we just had about religion, prohibiting discrimination and ensuring equal access to education. All sorts of laws also implemented, passed by our Congress to ensure that the Department of Education can do just that. That's why it's so concerning that, again, just last week, Department of Education placing many employees across its offices on administrative leave, part of this wave, focusing in particular upon diversity and the DEI initiatives that are a part of every federal agency. And the department notifying affected employees that they would lose access to their email accounts, continue to receive pay for an indefinite period, but put on leave. Dozens of suspensions at the agency as a part of Donald Trump's effort to make good on his promise to bring the Department of Education to its knees to stop it from going forward. The department apparently citing guidance, the Department of Education internally citing guidance from the Office of Personnel Management, which had directed agencies to submit plans for shedding staff associated with diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's DEI efforts by the end of last week. Again, this broad focus upon DEA. According to interviews conducted by those placed on leave inside the Department of Education, people familiar with these notifications, the department appealed to have cast a very wide net in getting rid of some of these employees, suspending people whose job titles and official duties had no connection whatsoever to DEI. Very troubling. Their only apparent exposure in some instances to DEI initiatives came in the form of trainings that are commonplace throughout federal agencies for years and years, again, under Republican and Democratic administrations, some of those initiated under the first Trump administration. One of the training programs that employees speculated may have led to their being flagged took place more than 9 years ago. You've got a lot of concern about what's going on at the Department of Education. Yes, in connection with these stopping these DEI initiatives there and plainly in other agencies as well. An awful lot of that, again, as a result of the president's initiative to eliminate diversity, focus, and DEI initiatives generally when it comes to the operation of federal agencies. It is a good thing, having spent 30 years inside the U.S. Department of Justice, engaging in some of those training initiatives, guiding those, inviting those programs in. It is a way of ensuring that agencies like the Department of Justice, like the Department of Education, all of them represent and look like America. Because when we are diverse, when we bring into the fold of these agencies, it's not easy work. It's not easy work. We want to make certain that that work, however challenging it is undertaken and pursued effectively and professionally by people of all different backgrounds. I often talk about immutable characteristics. Those include, of course, national origin and race, and yes, indeed, religion and faith affiliation, people with disabilities, sexual orientation, gender identity, familial status, economic status, all kinds of things that are out there. We are better when people from all of those different areas, all those immutable characteristics, are a part of our agencies, including, yes, indeed, the Department of Education, with these all-important missions that we've talked about as well. We know in some other news that the continued focus of the Department of Justice, we'll talk about a lot of that this coming weekend, the same kinds of things going on there under the now leadership of Pam Bondi. We also know that federal judges, as we just commented about in connection with the USAID halt on shuttering the offices, there are federal judges often become involved in these kinds of things when people petition in the federal courts to stop this administration from going ahead. Well, just recently, again, a federal judge in Massachusetts, his name is George A. O'Toole, Jr. He is a district judge in the District of Massachusetts at the federal district there. He stopped the Office of Personnel Management from moving forward on a fork in the road plan. You probably have heard a lot about this. This is the program offering federal workers incentives to quit. This is probably a part of the larger initiative being undertaken by Elon Musk at the direction of the president, this DOGE initiative, to reduce the overall size of the federal government, but doing it not with sensitivity and with an understanding of where reductions can legitimately be made, but nonetheless, to the contrary, under broad brush strokes. And so this fork in the road plan, detailed in an email sent to roughly 2 million federal employees just last week, 2 million employees offered workers the chance to resign. Get out now, resign now, and be paid through the end of September.
Wow, how efficient.
Yes. Yeah, go home and sit there, leave, resign, don't come back, but we'll pay you through the end of September. Note that. Yes, you're already noting that, right, Jess? Because an awful lot of people, including me, look at that and say, that too is illegal. There is no appropriation for that. You cannot resign and take people off the payroll and continue to pay them. Now, there are all sorts of circumstances, yes, under which people can get paid leave and administrative leave and all kinds of things that are part of their employment. But once you're no longer an employee, absent those retirees and those other people who are vested with benefits, those kinds of things, you can't simply terminate employees, tell them to go home, and still pay them for services that are not being provided to the federal government and, yes, to the people of America. And, yes, indeed, labor unions and others have challenged the legality of this on just that basis, unconstitutional. And again, the kind of thing that only the Congress can do if the Congress wants to pass such a package. They could do that, probably wouldn't do it. But nonetheless, this latest effort to, again, reduce the government facing federal pushback. And indeed, this federal judge in Massachusetts barred the Trump administration from doing just that, imposing a midnight deadline on federal workers
who were offered the chance to take a deferred resignation and pausing the initiative until a hearing, yes, that's right, coming up on Monday. Again, these very, very short TROs, if you will, these efforts to try to stop these things from happening until the judges can take a closer look at these programs. The offer was set to expire last night, Thursday at 11:59, part of this sweeping effort once again to cut the size of federal government, again, based upon the nature of its going ahead and the endorsement given it by the Office of Personnel Management under this administration, certainly not past administrations. More than 40,000 federal workers had already accepted this offer. White House press secretary telling us that. She said the number was expected to increase. She said, we encourage federal workers in this city to accept this very generous offer, adding, we'll find highly competent individuals who want to fill these roles. That's the press secretary explaining that, yes, indeed, kind of embracing what the federal judge has done to postpone this deadline, but saying, yes, quit now. We'll find somebody else to follow up in your place. And then we also have this, Jess, as we continue to talk about things that have been going on inside our federal government, noted significantly more than 8,000 web pages across more than a dozen of these U.S. government agencies, some of them independent, some of them inside the executive branch, have been taken down in recent days based upon Donald Trump's orders that principally target diversity initiatives, once again, DEI initiatives, and what he called gender ideology. The purges have removed information about vaccines, about veterans care, hate crimes, scientific research, among many other topics. Doctors, researchers, other professionals often rely on that government information. Some of those agencies appear to have removed entire sections of their websites, while others are missing only a handful of pages. When we come back for our final segment, I'll tell you a little bit more about that. And then, yes, indeed, I'm going to call upon you, including you, Jess, to tell us something good. I've got one of my own. All of that coming up as the Dom Salvio Show continues here on the stations of Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is the Dom Salvio Show. My name is Jim Santel. This is the final segment of our afternoon. A few more bits of business we need to do, and that is to tell you a little bit more about the effect of these huge directives, apparently, to take things down. 8,000 web pages across our federal government taken down, no longer accessible. Among those 3,000 pages from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 1,000 research articles filed under Preventing Chronic Disease, STD Treatment Guidelines, information about Alzheimer's, all kinds of things, vaccine guidelines, all kinds of things out there. 3,000 pages from the Census Bureau, no longer accessible. Vast majority of those are articles about research and methodology. Missing pages include data stewardship policies, documentation for data sets and surveys. An awful lot of people use that information for research. 1,000 pages from something, again, close to my heart, the Office of Justice Programs inside the Department of Justice, including a feature on teenage dating violence and a blog about grants that have gone toward combating hate crimes, Head Start, substance abuse and mental health services, Food and Drug Administration, the Office of Science and Technical Information, the Internal Revenue Service, Health Resources and Services Administration, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Department of Interior, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Department of Veterans Affairs, the Marshals Service. Across the board, thousands of pages of information no longer accessible to you and to me. Very troubling, Jess, as we articulate our concern about that. and about all these other things going on right now at the hand of the Trump administration. It is overwhelming, is it not?
It is. And part of the reason for it is to be overwhelming.
Absolutely.
The flood of information that is devastating and scary. It is intentionally made to be that way so that we become numb to it, so that we become overwhelmed, and so that we tune out.
But we don't tune out here, right? Because we're talking about all these things.
Here. And this is one of the reasons why we make time for something good.
Right.
So
absolutely.
That is why we are going to do our segment
right now. And we're going to start with Robert, mm-hmm. who apparently has a thought about Doge and again this attempt to try to reform government. Also does have something good, Robert, for us to begin this final segment as well. Go ahead, Robert. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you. The first thing that alarms me is we have a South African who went to school in Canada to ditch his military service. And we've turned the government over to this guy. Under what force of law does he even have the ability to have an agency exist, regardless of the conflicts? One could say they're trying to destroy the government so they can destroy the dollar. Remember, they have their half-baked idea about everyone should invest in Bitcoin. It's right along the lines of what the Bush administration wanted to do with Social Security. The good thing of the week is the Trump administration, I don't know if they did this accidentally, said they were going to get rid of the de minimis tax law changes. So the fast fashion industry, he knew they dump horrible products into our landfills, you know, things you wear once and throw away.
Yes.
And big environmental impact. They're tax dodgers. So companies on Main Street are at a disadvantage. Local communities don't get their tax revenue. So all of our property taxes go up. So I think that was wonderful that the Trump administration did that. I don't know if they realized what they did.
Given all the other things.
Maybe they accidentally did a good thing, but you know what? We'll
take it, absolutely. And again, Robert, your question about Doge legitimacy, there is no department out there, and we don't know exactly how it is that Elon Musk, not elected, not appointed,
right.
is doing
well,
these kinds
Trump
of things.
Well, Trump has, by executive order, quote unquote, you know, declared the Department of Governmental Efficiency. It's just that he doesn't actually have the power to do that.
Right, right. And a reason, again, to be focused on all of these things and continue to ask these all-important questions about authority and congressional action, all those kinds mm-hmm. of things.
Mm-hmm.
And also just to ask about your good thing.
My good thing? I've got a couple good things here.
Good.
So I'm going to start with one that's just from 2 hours ago.
Wonderful.
I was not feeling great. It's just been a rough day, not feeling good. And you brought me an apple fritter.
I did.
And apple fritters are one of my absolute favorite treats in this world. I've never told you that until today. But it was just a wonderful little delight and just one of those things that reminded me that, yes, the world feels very, very bitter right now. And there are still moments of sweetness.
There are moments of sweetness. And there are apple fritters.
There are apple fritters. I have a second good
Wonderful.
Thing. This
Please.
Weekend, I'm going to go to do my other job, which is teaching. And that is always something that brings me joy. It is something that is good. It is a way that I contribute to my community. So that is my something good.
It's a part
what
of
do you
weekend.
Have that is something good
Education,
for us?
Education, again, important. Jess, you do it. And others I know who are listening do that routinely, directly and indirectly. Cannot overstate the importance of education. And so we talked a little bit previously about this program offering federal workers incentives to quit. So it's inside that otherwise ugly story. We've got some humor happening inside some of the GSA workers who have gotten these memorandums telling them to leave, making some dark jokes about the incessant messaging from their leadership asking them to leave. In one private Slack channel, apparently, someone shared a meme of a cartoon character receiving a message in a bottle on a deserted island that read, "You have until 11:59 Eastern Standard Time to respond to the fork in the road and accept deferred resignation offer." Another worker cast doubt on some of the promises being made in this resignation offer, sharing the text of part of the supposed agreement with a meme of Marsha Brady from the Brady Bunch saying, "Nice try, Jan." Nice try. Nice try, all of us, as we continue to work inside the United States of America and beyond the United States of America to make our world a better place. I thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, joining Jess and me for this important discussion. The Dom Salvia Show, always here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media every day. from 4 to 6. Thank you for being a part of our important discussion here on Civic Media. Have a good day, everybody.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.